I'm pressing record.
Calls back to order, and just if I can take 1 minute before you get started, just to let the board know, I just spoke with both candidates. Heath could not have been more gracious, wished us well, says he'll always be a supporter and wants to be part of what's going on in South Carolina with charter schools and whatnot. He couldn't have gone better. Elliot is bouncing off the ceiling and is ready to go to work.
He'll get over that soon.
Y'all will drag him down.
Yeah.
Right?
But, that's him. You're ready.
Yeah.
He's got some energy.
Yeah, I mean, you could hear, you know, you could feel the energy.
Yeah.
But he's excited. And I've told him to be thinking about kickbacks. those went well, and thank goodness we're through that process. Okay, I'm sorry. You are the presenter, and can I have your name, please?
Bernie Sprain Walker.
Okay, thank you. And I can tell you've got people here with you, and I know you're familiar with our process, but you'll have 30 minutes to make your presentation. The board will then have however much time they want to ask questions and whatnot, and then we'll make a decision. But the first thing we would like for you to do is introduce everybody you have with you and what role they played on the committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bernie Sprain Walker. I'm the chairman of the committee, and we'll let everybody else introduce themselves and tell them about it.
Okay.
Good morning. Hello. My name is Ted Nobles. I'm the chairman of the Facilities and Property Committee.
My name is Don McCain. I work with Finance on the committee.
My name is Linda Washington, and I work with Discipline on the committee.
My name is Rosa Ishmael, and I've been working with Curriculum.
My name is Linda Smith, and I work with Curriculum.
My name is Betty Butler. I work with fundraising and also evidence of need and support.
My name is Jeannie Landon, and I'm working with this getting part of it.
Okay, thank you.
All right. The mission of Veterans Preparatory Leadership Academy is to prepare students to be citizens of integrity who will become lifelong learners and leaders working together to develop academic excellence, ethical behavior, and personal responsibility. About BPLA, our school focus will be STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and leadership. At OpenE, we are preparing for kindergarten by K through grade 5 and K through 8 at Built Out. Our region is Edgefield. Our geographical school district is Edgefield, and our proposed school will be located at the north end of Edgefield County near the Aiken County line. Enrollment at OpenE is 228, expected 228. We are having two classes per grade, which is kindergarten through two. There will be 18 students per classroom, 2 times 18 is 36, and 36 times 3 is 18, and grade 3 through 5, we will have 40 students in each grade, 20 in each class, so that would be an additional 180 students, anyway, ends up to 228. All right. And enrollment at Build Out is 348, because in grade 6 through 8, we're still going to have 40 students per grade, 20 students in each class. So our enrollment projection is 228, not 216. Our BPLA planning committee, we have lots of people on our committee. What we did is we listed everyone who had passed input into our planning process. Some are here today, some are on vacation. One or two have moved, but all of them have had significant input, so we lift them all. and they are Mr. Ramon Asmore, Dr. Stephanie Breithart Jackson, Reverend George Breithart, Mrs. Betty Y. Butler, Dr. Rosa Ishmael, Mr. Donnie Jackson, Mrs. Patricia Knight, Reverend Edward Lloyd, Dr. Thomas McCain, Mrs. Betty J.W. Morgan, Mr. Charles Morgan, Mrs. Savannah Myers, Dr. Samantha Nobles, Mr. Ted Nobles, Mr. Mac Thomas, Dr. Linda Washington, and yours truly. The diversity of our board. Our board is made of people from not only Edgefield County, but Aiken County. And the diversity is in that of what we do. We have engineers that work at Plant Vogel and Westinghouse. We have Westinghouse Savannah River Site employees. We have teachers that are current. We have a foreign language teacher on our committee. We have teachers that are retired in areas of mathematics, English, elementary, and of all the grade levels, actually, all the levels. We have two clergy. We have a county council member. We have business owners, parents, grandparents that are rearing young children. We have current education administrators that work in three different counties and in two states. We have a former school level and district level administrators. We have current school level administrators. We have a former charter school principal. We have a charter school teacher. We have former county administrator and Head Start executive director. And we are representing several community boards and businesses contributing to services and finances to BPLA. Our educational community and business partnerships, USCA Ruth Patrick Science Center, we've been in collaboration with them ever since 2013 and what they will offer to us. We have something in our appendix stating a letter from them, and we will talk a little bit more about that later. We have the regional S2, and forgive me, I couldn't get my exponent up there, center that covers our region. We're in contact with Clemson University, Clemson Extension, Aiken Electric Cooperative Education Division, the 4-H Volunteers and Clubs, 100 Black Men of Augusta, the Mount Canaan Association Incorporated, which is made up of 24 church alliances, which own 308 acres of property, and which they have donated 10 of those acres to us, instructional equipment, and funding that will be funding piano labs. We have Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, and all of the fraternities and sororities are graduate level, which means that these are professional men and women that have made up at least 40 to 60 people that we've been contributing services. Women in Unity, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, we have the Black Engineers Group, the Technology Specialists, Veterans Alumni Association, the Veterans Academy area at once upon a time from 1881 until about 1954, was a junior college there. And there are still people that belong to that association that want to have input and help along with this effort. We have private donors who are, and Dr. McCain will talk more about that later, who have promised at least $10,000 or more to our effort. We have parents, grandparents, and retired teachers. We have a former Edgefield County School Board members that are partners with us. And we have been in collaboration and working really well with Fox Creek Charter School, who is on the northwest end of Edgefield County. And we have a collaboration of Edgefield and Aiken County Baptist Church. All of those are listed in Appendix H. The formation of the Charter Planning Committee. The mother and daughter were myself and my daughter, who were educated again a committee through identification of students with academic needs. Stephanie's middle school, I was more concentrated in elementary school. We met with another educator who had identified Edgefield students with academic and behavior issues. She worked in Edgefield County, and I at one point worked in Edgefield County. We contacted the moderator of the Mount Canaan Association Incorporated. That was the 24 churches across Edgefield and Aiken County, and held a meeting with him and his executive board about consideration of assistance to support the effort through churches and also for building assistance. held several community interest meetings from August to October of 2013 in the Trenton, Johnson, and Edgefield area, and we solicited parental and committee support at each site. We held special interest meetings to solicit organization support from churches, pastors. We had special meetings with local graduate fraternities, graduate level sororities, community organization leaders, educators, local business owners, and daycare heads. Each effort yielded support from marginal to dedicated commitment of time and energy. All names listed have contributed many volunteer hours. Our committee represents leaders and heads of organization, business, and industry. At our venue solicitation, some have relocated, taken jobs, or committed to other ventures. None were targeted. Those remaining continue to be dedicated to educating children. In our executive summary and evidence of media support, what we want to show here is that in our traditional elementary school, we have four in Edgefield County. There is no intentional STEM focus. The STEM, there is a slight STEM focus, but it begins in middle school. We intend to have STEM as our major focus in grades K through 8 at BPLA. There is no intentional leadership focus in our elementary schools. We will have a leadership focus in grades K through 8 at BPLA. In our traditional elementary schools, there's a single grade with teacher transition. Each year the child is moved up to a different teacher. What we are proposing is a looping grade structure. We will explain what that is, where children move with a teacher and they loop around. How we intend to make a difference. We talk a little bit here about how STEM education improves student learning. STEM education has emerged as one of the most sought-after curriculum designs for integrating science, technology, engineering, and mathematics in K-12 education. Studies have concluded that course acceleration in itself is not a strong enough factor to improve individual learning. However, learning activities where students practice using integrated skills to solve problems allow for a more deeper and meaningful student learning. When STEM education practices a method is integrated into the mainstream education, it serves as an opportunity to provide equity for motivated but disadvantaged students from a variety of backgrounds. And that is what we have in Edgefield County. Our focus on STEM integration will be based on national standards education developed by organizations such as National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the National Research Council, and the International Technology Education Association. Many of the models adopted and used in STEM environments have made significant gains on improved student learning and not solely with the academically gifted population. Students' attitudes towards STEM education proved to be a major factor when addressing the needs of students' affective domain in order to increase individual motivation. Our professional development and instructional practice will be directed and guided by the Ruth Patrick Science Center and the Regional STEM Centers. All teachers will be STEM teachers. We will employ one STEM coach. Not one STEM teacher, one STEM coach. Leadership development and holistic teaching. We recognize that youth leadership will be a part of the youth development process to support the young person in development. As we said in our mission statement, we want to see the whole child be developed. The ability to analyze his or her own strengths and weaknesses, set personal and vocational goals, and have self-esteem, confidence, motivation, and ability to carry them out, including the ability to establish support networks in order to fully participate in community life and effective positive social change. We want to help grow children that will help their community. And the ability to guide or direct others on a course of action, influence the opinions and behaviors of others, and serve as a role model. Our focus will be on families, schools, and community promoting healthy youth development. What we have learned in our years' experience is that you can't have a good school unless you have families involved, unless you have a community that's involved in promoting what you're trying to do. All right. And we will use the indicators from the National Alliance of Secondary Education Transition Standards indicators, and that's also appendix 8, because we will be working with K through 8. What is holistic teaching? It's a philosophy of education based on the premise that each person finds identity, meaning, and purpose in life through connections to the community, to the natural world, and to humanitarian values such as compassion and peace, aiming to call forth from students an intrinsic reverence for life and a passionate love of learning. We want our children and our school to be a place where when you walk in the door, you will know that children love learning. Children want to be good citizens. Now the looping grade structure. John Lounsbury said, humans need meaningful relationships, particularly when they're in major developmental periods. And to further support the instructional program of BPLA, we will utilize a looping class grade structure. It is a structure, not a program. It is a structure of the education environment where teachers work or rotate with or maintain the same students for 2 or more years consecutively. Students and teachers will loop in grades 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. For the first year of grade 5, we will offer a self-contained classroom with some departmentalization to prepare for transitioning to the middle school. In year 2, when grade 6 is added, we will combine looping and departmentalization and maintain this pattern for grade 6 through 8. This structure builds student-to-teacher and teacher-to-student relationship, which increases instructional time, increases teachers' content and curriculum knowledge. And it adds support. As I said earlier, looping is a structure, not a program. You can't, and this is some of what has been said about looping by teachers and by those who have used looping as a structure. You can't make a student learn. You have to get to know. You have to get to know how they learn, how they retain information, and what motivates them. Developing this relationship with students and their families create trusting and caring classroom environments and help students overcome both academic and developmental obstacles. When you make a 2-year investment, you're building a community that everyone learns to be a part of. Learning in school is as much a social activity as it is a cognitive one. The approach gives teachers a chance to understand the individual learning styles of their students, which is especially beneficial for students who have challenges in the classroom, and it would also be especially beneficial if we are teaching leadership skills and also in the STEM focus area. Now, when we talk about need and support, I hope you all can see what's red and what's black. Can you all see?
All right. Not really.
Now, I'm not sure if any test scores have come out from ESPY, but they weren't out by the time we did this. So what we still have is PASS. And when we look at, when we talk about our STEM focus, and remember what we see here, numbers and, well, I could do something at this point, but I better not try. The numbers in red indicate that 25% or more students not meeting standards in the indicated subject areas. 4 elementary schools, Douglas, Johnston, Meriwether, and W. Parker. All right, we have grades 3, 4, and 5. All right, when we look at, let's just look at writing. Let's go down. If we look at writing at Douglas and Johnston, it looks like there's some trouble, right? We look at the percentage of students who are 25% or more of them not meeting standards. When we look at, thank you. Okay, you can point. When we look at ELA, we see the same thing pattern kind of happening in those two schools, Douglas and Johnson. But when we get to math and science, we still see the two schools having problems, but we see now there's problems in math and science in Meriwether and science in at W. Parker. And we see sort of the same pattern over in social studies. All right, now, the indicators of academic need as we continue. Now, when our state decided to do the Issa waiver and make, and I won't get into all of that. the state came up with performance annual measurable objectives. If we look at grades 3 through 5, that score, which is indicating whether students are going to be ready or meet our state goals by 2020 or whenever, that score for grades 3 through 5 is 640. When we look at our schools in 2014 on the state assessments of grades 3 through 5, we see where we are with Douglas and Johnson Elementary with ELA. They're in the red because they didn't make 640. When we look at our math scores, now we pick up another school. Douglas, Johnson, Meriwether did not make 640. And then when we look at science, all 4 of our elementary schools are not making the annual measurable objective. Okay? What are they indicating? The students are not performing at a grade level to reach state annual objectives in science and math. That innovative, different, and more intentional approaches to address areas of weakness is needed. That challenging and focused curriculum to address literacy and content subject areas is needed. Strategies to improve student motivation, involvement, and support of parents, families, community, business, and industry is needed. The impact of focus and grade structure on academic achievement, addressing the need. We want to address it with STEM. And in collaboration with Ruth Patrick Aiken, this is what we came up with together. Through their program, in helping us, we will enhance teacher content knowledge of grade level mathematics content. They will help us add support for developing effective teaching strategies can be employed in the classroom, methodologies that strengthen relevance, student interest, and conceptual understanding. We will provide professional development, helping teaching practices involving evidence-based argumentation in math and science. Innovative instructional practices, including the use of technology and online interactive simulation for teaching mathematics and science content. Exemplary training on the use and analysis of grade-level mathematics lessons assessing the STEM application. Awareness of resources for effective implementation of STEM education at the classroom level. And through the S2STEM regional centers, they have offered to help us in customizing professional development and forming not only the learners, but the leaders in the school, and supporting instructional change. Because going from the way we teach science and math to being STEM leaders in STEM school is going to mean instructional change for teachers. All right, continuing on the impact and the focus of leadership. We want to promote a learning environment where youth acquire the skills, behaviors, and attitudes that enable them to learn and grow in self-doubt, social interaction, and physical and emotional health. We want to promote youth understanding the relationship between their individual strengths and desires and their future goals. Because when we talk about goals 2020, we need to start while they're young children thinking about why they're learning these things, what they want to do later on, and have the skills to act on that understanding. And we want youth to have the knowledge and skills needed to practice leadership and participate in community life. Evidence of need and support continue. In January 2015, we were told to stop, just stop, because the new 2015 application was coming out. But we did kind of stop in a way, because we didn't know what it was going to say. But we continued to do some things. We continued to have community meetings in 2 counties. We did door-to-door canvassing. We attended countywide events with booths, not just flyers. We sat down and talked to people. We attended the Edgefield Business Alliance Expo, not 1 year, but every year. And we talked to parents, and we talked to business leaders, and we talked to community. We attended every festival there was anywhere within 50-mile radius. We attended every Earth Day event and talked to parents. We sent out mailings. Better's alumni had functions. We went to every one. We attended banquets. And we got a place on the program, whether we were invited to or not. We attended community programs. Went to all parks and special events. And church information meetings. And what we want you to know about church information meetings. When we say a 24-church alliance, we're talking about thousands of people. We went to church informational meetings. We were very thankful that that organization allowed us to do that. Fundraising campaign, we've had those. We have had surveys, and we do have a notebook that have samples and some of our surveys. We've had volunteers to do it. We have them in English and in Spanish. And they indicate the age of students, how many siblings are in the family, and how many will possibly come to our school. And we have signature sheets of everywhere we've gone. Some of our English signature sheets indicate whether or not they will send children, whether they support it, or whether or not they just been informed about it. All right, let's look at our student enrollment. And we have Dr. Ishmael and Ms. Butler will talk about our student enrollment. I don't know how many minutes are going, but I'm trying to talk fast.
There's about 8 to 10 minutes left.
Okay.
We certainly believe we have the capacity to have a charter school in Edgefield County. Betty's Academy is a school that has had a lot of people over the years who are graduates. And the school that we're talking about, Betty's Prep, will be on that site. And so therefore, we have been in the community of Betty's, and we know that Betty's Academy, the area is growing by leaps and bounds. Betty's Academy, and where our school will be located, is on the north side of Edgefield County. And it borders Aiken County. Where the school will be located will be about 2 miles from Aiken County. And those counties are right there together, and it's growing so fast and so quickly until that you can't tell where one begins and one ends. It's almost seamless. Bridgestone has located there, and Bridgestone is a very large employer of people in the community. And so we feel like we have gotten out over 200 surveys, and we have 500 signatures, and we have that located in one of our appendices, which will be in Appendix H.
BPLA will begin with 228 students, 5K through grade 5, adding a grade each year through grade 8, with build out at 348. All right, 5K will have two classes. There will be 18 students per class, total 36. First grade, two classes, 18 each, total 36. Second grade, two classes, students per class, 18 total, 36. Grade 3, two classes, students per class, 20, total 40. Grade 4, number of classes, 2, students per class, 20, total 40. And 5, 2 classes, students per class, 20, and the total will be 40, bringing that to 228.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. We will be guiding the enrollment of our students. We will receive and process our applications that come in. We expect our applications to come in through postal, email, and on-site. Once we get those applications in, we will notify our parents. We will have priority enrollment and join procedures, and they are listed in our application. We'll do a lottery process. For those students who may not get in, we'll have a student appeal process. We will follow the South Carolina Public Charter School desegregation order, and the charter school is not, the South Carolina Public Charter School is not under a desegregation order, and we will follow our racial composition as with the Edgefield County schools. We will have a school director, a curriculum specialist, which will be our assistant principal. We will have a contracted professional development person. We'll have a STEM coach. We'll have teachers who will retire in first year, and we will pair those first-year teachers, and we'll pair the retired teachers and the first-year teachers up on each grade level.
we'll have an organized volunteer program. In that volunteer program, Mrs. Mertes has already talked about where our volunteers will be coming from. They will be professional people working with our students. We will have instructional day from 7:30 a.m. to 3 o'clock p.m., and our day will allow for specialized STEM and leadership projects. We will have continuous ongoing professional staff development. That staff development will be led by professionals from University of South Carolina at Aiken, specifically from the Ruth Patrick Science Center, and also from Georgia Regents University. And they will, the professional development will focus on STEM, literacy, and leadership development.
Okay. You all have about 5 minutes left.
Okay. All right. This talks about our educational program. We talk about rigor. We talked about practices, how the curriculum will be presented, core instruction and intervention, and how our instruction will be driven by state benchmark, MAP or STAR. We say MAP or STAR because right now, when we check with MAP and STAR, no one is quite aligned to the new state standard. We will use progress monitoring assessments such as Fontes and Pinnell, an ongoing teacher development and program. We intend to be in compliance with all applicable state Board of Education regulations and statutes, including what comes with 504. In the area of curriculum and instruction, we provide all mandated subjects and specialized instruction. All right, we're going to talk about STEM focus again. We're going to address standards, project-based, and inquiry lessons, connection with all the four STEM subjects. We really want to get to what our program, what our classrooms would look like, so I'm hurrying. We will have a STEM coach, and Ruth, we talked about what Ruth Patrick and the S2 STEM centers will provide. All right, what we do have to show is that we are not just going to operate by the seat of our pants. Through Ruth Patrick, we do have STEM learning components that come from the Drayton Quality Component Session. We have 10 components, potential for engaging students, degree of STEM integration, connection to them, STEM discipline, all the way down to the quality of technology integration. And at this time, we'll ask Jeannie and Linda to come forward and talk a little bit about what our program will look like.
And I just need to let you know, you only have about 2 minutes
okay.
to do that.
We want to get those 2 minutes.
Turns into a service project for the school. It's vertical, can be a vertical collaboration from K through 8. It can encompass all the areas that you're doing in this STEM program, but more than that, it encompasses the volunteers in your school, the parental involvement in your school, and also gives a good place to have an outdoor classroom where you have these things that Ruth Patrick's going to be giving you, the things that they're talking about coming from GRU can all be encompassed in this butterfly garden. If you follow the standards, which is another thing that you're teaching your children to do, follow an outline. You have the economics in there that they have to learn to talk to people as stakeholders that are in your cities and in your county to ask them to help you develop this. So you're starting with nothing and you're developing areas and everybody's involved from K through 8. And it allows the teachers to have the collaboration with the other teachers vertically, which is what we want, because we want it to be something that they can invest in and it make them be a part of the school. And this makes your children and your teachers and your volunteers and your parents have a big buy-in with your school. And it turns out to be something that brings others into your school as a recognition for what you're doing. So it doesn't just help just the students. It goes into being a very service-oriented thing for your school. So it's something that we've had great success with in 5 areas in the Augusta CSR area, and we're very interested in sharing it if this is something that the that we can see can happen with our charter school.
Go ahead. We'll take a few more minutes.
Well, I'm here to speak about the emergent readiness. Okay, well, K through 2 believe, and all the committee believes, that we've got to have a strong foundation with early literacy. And our program is going to consist of a supplementary program that will teach children to read through play, where they will not even know that they are learning to read and learning the sounds. And as they do this through play, manipulatives, puppets are the main focus, and the educational TV here in Columbia has adopted this program. There is a closed circuit program using this program. But this has been very successful in classes where it's been used, because research has proven that through hands-on manipulatives, young children learn faster and become better readers, and it's across the curriculum with this puppetry program. In science, they will learn the process skills, you know, and learn so much about science through puppetry. Also in math, puppets will be used. Children love puppets, and it has been proven that puppetry does work in teaching young children.
And our curriculum will be guided by our curriculum, and for our grades on our K through grade will be guided by another curriculum program that we list in now, and we were told at one point not to say what they were. But anyway, it's listed in our opinion. Do we have a minute to just talk about finances?
Sure. Well, I think we need to do that.
And we won't do any more about our educational program. We'll talk about leadership development.
Okay.
So we'll go on. Special
needs,
you
know, well, I mean, how much more time do you think you need?
Well, if you are going to ask this question about the little lady camp, we really want you to want to address the finance issue and the building.
I think let's do those then.
Okay.
Let's get to those.
All right. You wanted to go first,
you know. Okay. Well, what I'd like to share with the committee. When we made the application before, we had in plan, and we had had a couple of fundraisers, and we had raised a little bit less than $5,000. So I thought that, hey, it's going to take more money than that. So what I did, having worked in the county as the county administrator, I made me a list of 10 individuals that I knew had $10,000 under their mattress. And I met with them one-on-one to see how many of them would be willing to give to this project a $10,000 donation. Out of the 10 people I selected, 9 of them made a commitment. And so I was very impressed by that. And some of them told me, said, you know what, there are other people. And they start naming individuals that I should contact. But I just wanted to see how many $10,000 I could really find by just talking to a group of 10. And so they gave me other names. Now, I haven't talked to those individuals yet, because many of them said, well, we would make a donation of $10,000, but we want to make sure we get tax credit for it. So I have this money waiting, and once we get the charter and the 501c3, then I'll start collecting money. So that's something I would appreciate.
Thank you.
Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
My name is Ted Nobles. I'm chairman of the Facilities Committee. I know we're short and limited on time, but I will try to summarize what we have done in terms of the Facilities Committee. The Biz Preparatory Leadership Academy will be a state of the art facility primarily focusing on its leadership and STEM programs. What that means is you will have classroom instruction as well as material that support all those. Now, you're already familiar that there is a officer school facility that already has a printed guideline in which schools should be built, the number of pupils, the number of access of things of that nature. So we as a committee, we have looked at all these things and will be guided by the officers of school facilities to install these different type of classrooms. Located on the campus of Bettis Academy, we already have an organization who is waiting and ready to provide us land to build this facility. This facility Initially, we start out with 16,000 square feet, up to 22,000 square feet. And when I say initially up to, because 16,000 square feet will primarily represent K through 5, and then 22,000, 6 through 8. Now, we've met with a number of subcontractors as well as construction and design firms who have expertise in building within the state of South Carolina. The budget can range between how basic you want it to how extravagant you want it. But looking at our funding, we believe that we have the capacity to build this facility. It would initially start out as modular units through that period up to a year that we would move into a permanent facility. I'm sure there are a number of questions that you have for me that I cannot get in at this moment, and I'll be welcome to address those at that time.
Thank you. Okay, do you want to have a 1 or 2 minute summary, or?
Okay, all right. My 1 or 2 minute summary is, we do have the capacity to support a school in the Bass Academy area. I don't know if it's fortunately or unfortunately that you may think that we have many educators on our board. But one of the things I can say is because we have our roots in our community, and because we are workers in our community, and because some of us are older, we are members of many organizations. And in many of those organizations, we are leading those organizations. And when you see our names on some of those things that say we will support, those names are representing 50 and 60 people who have signed on. For instance, one of our members is a pastor. Well, he's a businessman. He owns 3 funeral homes. And he also is leading some of those 24 pastors who signed on to give things. What we say is that we have the background knowledge and we are very resourceful. What we don't already have, we know how to find and to get. And we would like to say that we have been working very diligently since 2013. We will continue to work for the students of Edgefield County. And we want to be chartered. We will do what it needs to, and what it takes to be chartered. We hope you find favor with what we have presented. We're willing to answer your questions. And whatever we don't have answers for, we're willing to find. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dana, could you flip the lights back on? Thanks.
I don't know how to.
Okay, we'll give the board now opportunities to ask questions. Since we're kind of starting a new season of applications, I'll just remind you, and I know we've got a couple of people here maybe who hadn't been through the process, but remind you that our purpose here is to ask questions, gather information so we can make an informed decision. Sometimes it's tempting to make suggestions to the applicants about what maybe they should have done or could have done or might want to do if and when they open and whatnot. That's not our purpose here is to bring in information and get information you need to make a good decision. John, might as well let you jump in.
Okay.
We'll start and go around the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for presenting to us today. Just going through my notes, I've just got a couple of quick questions. I see that you submitted your application on June 1st. What was your expected, if you were granted this charter, when did you want to open?
August of 2016.
Right.
Just quickly, you mentioned briefly about your facilities. Have you contacted OSF and DOT to ask that? Because I can tell you from experience that it's very rigorous, and there are small staff, and they're spread throughout the state. It typically takes them a while to get around. Have you contacted?
Yes, I've been in contact with offices, schools, facilities, the Lisa Clark. Back in May 2nd, 2014, herself as well as a traffic engineer met with me at the location of the proposed building site. And on site, we discussed some things in terms of a building schedule excavation, engineering site, civil layout, inspections, things of that nature. And on-site, she has given us approval saying that this is a suitable site to locate your school. Mm-hmm. Now, been still in contact with her all spring. Unsuccessfully, she has not responded to my effort to get in documentation stating that the site is approved. Numerous times, I knew that would be a factor in consideration in having this in the application. But she do remember that conversation. I'm sure she has other email and correspondences. So Office of Schools and Facilities are well aware of where we're building at and the challenges to build. And we are looking forward to working along with them alongside. When it comes down to modular units, especially if you have a subcontractor who specializes in building, and what I'm talking about, people who actually build and design. You have a team of engineers, myself, input from the planning committee, as well as contractors. This, in particular, I'm talking with people who specialize working with charter schools and have built charter schools. And a number of them are familiar with the Office of School Facilities planning guide process. So, yes, we have, in a nutshell, we have been in contact with Office of School Facilities.
Okay, and just as far as facilities go, one other quick question, and you might could answer this since you're the administrator. Zoning, have you gotten approval for zoning for this area? Because that can be tricky sometimes too.
Well, you got to understand, you know, how can you make it if we can't get a charter approval? Why would I go and get zoning? But this area has already been zoned as commercial and residential. And at another meeting, I met with official, I guess you call them the county, city, artist type of people to look at where we're building, see if there was any problem. So they have looked at traffic as main thoroughway as well as the main roads that's passing through the school. So we don't foresee any challenges with zoning. It's in a very good layout. We already have a Edgefield kind of recreational. It's already out there, mm-hmm. in which we plan to utilize their recreational facilities for playground, student activity. So they're very familiar where we're building that. And just like any construction project, you will have to go through inspection, you have to go through zoning. Those particulars will be handled at such time. Mm-hmm. But you just cannot go and say, I want to get it zoned if you don't have nothing zoned on. They don't work.
And then one other quick question regarding the finance. Who prepared your budget? Is it your committee, or do you have a CPA firm helping?
CPA firm, Kitty, Melissa Kitty.
Okay, all right. And I see your average teacher salary is about $30,000.
All right, let's talk about that.
How does that compare to the Edgefield County School District? Is it comparable? Is it less? Is it more? Just curious.
Our plan is to utilize retired teachers and first-year teachers, pair them mm-hmm. with the experience in the new. The $30,000 is above what new teachers make in Edgefield County. The $30,000 is retired. We have big inquiry, and what happens with retired teachers is they don't want to mess with other kinds of funds that they get, so they have a certain amount that they can make over. And in our district, at one point in time, when the recession was about to come on, there were many retired teachers or people who were in the retirement phase were furloughed to save that money. So we have young retired teachers who are energetic, and because we're in the CSRA, we have many that are going to cross the line. That's what we do in that area she spoke earlier about. So we have a large pool of energetic retirees who will be willing to work at $30,000.
Thank you. And just
and we're talking about 12 teachers.
Just one other piece of advice I've learned. You were speaking about your 501c3 and the people who want to contribute. I've actually helped put those applications together. They do take a long time. Don't think it's going to turn on a dime. You can expect maybe a year your application to go through.
We have already consulted someone who's doing that for us because we were instructed to get started with that, mm-hmm. And we are well on the way with the process.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Reese?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you all for for making your presentation. One thing I'm having a hard time seeing, and I appreciate maybe some additional help. I hear about your aspirational goals. I admire your enthusiasm. It sounds like what you're trying to do is noble. What I don't hear in the presentation are kind of the nuts and bolts. I hear the aspirational, where you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Talk a little bit about the transition from this planning team effort to a governing board, and I didn't hear any talk about a senior staff. And maybe I missed it, I apologize, but is there a leadership team for the school that's been selected for operational purposes going forward? And is there a board, and how will the board, and how does the board compare to the planning effort?
Okay, the planning board, on page, I think I had it listed what page it is on the disposition of the board and the transition. Mm-hmm. It's listed on page, I think, 34 or 36. We have a planning board at this point in time. Some of the members of this planning team want to stay on the permanent board. And of course, we have a bylaw in there about how we want to have 11 board members. And it says that our bylaw says that we have to have at least over half of them, or the law says over half of them are elected. We talked about the transition being in the fall, and with the first board meeting of the newly elected board members, because there will be orientation on the transition will happen. I don't know if I answered your question.
That was on page 36, dissolution of the planning board.
And when you say the fall, you mean the fall of this year?
No.
Fall of?
No, 2016.
Okay.
Okay, Betty?
There's a lot of emphasis on Ruth Patrick. Their STEM school, mm-hmm. and also the regional STEM. Do you have a contract with them or agreement?
We have a letter in our packet from Ruth Patrick that says all of those things that they're willing to help us with. We already have a relationship with Ruth Patrick. I work in several districts and have worked with Ruth Patrick a long time. Ruth Patrick is very close to where our facility will be. We know the people there. We even have some people who we had some of our organizational meeting. One of the math consultants that worked for Ruth Patrick and his wife, who also do some things with that, are coming out to help, to volunteer to help with them. But yes, there is something where they've agreed to provide professional development we need.
Is this the same professional development that they provide to the districts in the area?
Some of it. But we have asked for more because they understand what our focus will be. We've had lengthy discussions with them. They understand that. And because the coordinator of that school practice is from Etria County. Mm-hmm. So she sees that as an investment in her county.
I just want to make sure that I'm aware of Ruth Patrick, and mm-hmm. I'm also aware of the regional STEM, and they are there for resource for the school districts. Mm-hmm. So they're already in the school districts providing right. professional development and STEM activities. And so you would get more?
We would get more.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, with the S2 STEM Regional Center, I spoke with her just this week about the additional coaching and the additional, and we've even provided in our professional development days, where we would have, and even with the coach, specialized training in order for that to happen.
Now, is this additional cost?
Yes, some of it is. Okay. Some of it is.
And you have that in your budget as well?
Yes, and we're looking at professional development. We're looking at Title II, Title I, all the titles we can find. And also, we have several grant writers. We have several grant writers, and we have written successful right. grants. To help with that, and we're putting in the budget. And yes, we talked to Melissa about that. And in areas in our budget, we see that we may adjust some things, because when we start talking about what we need as far as training, I will readily say I know about professional development and training, but sometimes you don't know what it costs until all of the costs that are involved. But they have agreed to work with us on college, and then we also know that when we say we're going to become a STEM school, you don't become a STEM school whole hog and you become great the first year. We know that it will be done in stages, and they have talked with us about how they will help those in those stages and help us become a strong school.
Yeah, and I want to come back to those stages a little bit later.
Okay.
But you talked about project-based learning in your application.
About what, I'm sorry?
Project-based learning.
Yeah.
And you know, there's STEM education inquiry, and it can lend itself over to project-based learning. But what type of professional development will you do with that?
The same time, in that STEM focus, and when we talk about what we need in those 10 components, teachers are being taught how to integrate, how to focus differently, and what a project is as opposed to what an activity is. We will be providing early release days and different kind of things so our teachers will be able to have that happening. In our professional learning communities, we know that we can't do everything. You know, you can't focus on everything. But we have to have focus on literacy, we have to have focus on that, we have to provide the time. When we're in our hiring process of looking at teachers, we want to look at teachers who have an interest and a background and who know what it means and who want to know what it means to be able to be in a project base. And we have people like this principal here who have done it. And we're relying heavily on people who have done it to see and to help us with. We also, Fox Creek isn't a STEM-based school. But we have a relationship with them, so they have promised to help us with some of those things along the way.
Okay, and I want to come back to that recruitment piece again, but in here you talk about quarterly thematic units, interdisciplinary instruction, project-based learning. Thematic units and project-based learning are not the same.
No.
Okay, I just want to get that. Now, the leadership piece of it, you speak about leadership as the secondary national standards.
Right.
Now, how will you take that and gear it down to kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth grade? As your leadership, how will you integrate leadership into curriculum using those national standards?
Well, when we talk about leadership, we're talking about leaders and whatever you're strong in. We have a focus on STEM. But when we talk about building, we want to build a capacity in children to be the best that they can be. The best thing they can be in whatever field they choose to be. So we're going to use that. Now, what we do have is folks within our group who are, and in some of those administrators, who have been in PBIS schools.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to spend the money on PBIS training because we have people who, but when we talk about positive behavior intervention, all of that goes into leaders because leaders have to know how to discipline themselves. So all of that works together.
But the leadership component, because you're building your school as STEM and leadership,
mm-hmm.
equal.
Right.
And then I noticed that you do talk about response to intervention.
Right.
But that's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, what is the curriculum for leadership that you're going to start in kindergarten and build all the way up eventually to the fifth grade?
We're going to use a combination of PBIS strategies. A combination, she was going to talk about that and skip that. We're going to use a combination of PBIS strategies along with what's recommended in that, because that's the secondary alliance that deals with middle school. We're going to have some middle schoolers too. So what we're going to do is we have to, with young children, we have to look at character. And we have to have the common rules and all of that. We're going to use the strategies with PBIS. Yes.
So you're actually using the strategies of response to intervention as your leadership program?
No.
I'm sorry, that's what I heard. Just tell me again.
We use this response to intervention. When we talk about response to intervention, we were talking about the academic side.
I'm just basically wanting to know, what is the leadership curriculum?
It's going to be guided by the indicators from the secondary
what we got about those indicators.
Okay. And so how will you take those and gear them down, back walk them to kindergarten?
Through the PBIS strategies.
And that's the response to engage tonight?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You mentioned foreign language. When are you going to work foreign language into your...
Just like a regular exploratory.
Okay. And what language will that be?
Spanish. Because we have a highly growing Spanish population.
Going back to the teachers, I noticed that you wanted first-year teachers and retired teachers. That was your target. But you got certification issues. What are you going to do?
Certification issues with which group?
With either group. And you talk about the wealth of knowledge that these teachers will bring. Well, first-year teachers are not bringing a wealth of knowledge.
No, that's why we have. That's why we're going to pair them with experienced teachers.
When you're building your budget on first-year teachers and retired teachers, sometimes they don't bring the skills to you that your students need, and you may not always be able to say it's going to be first-year teachers and retired teachers. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't put yourself in a corner. Now, the puppetry. You're familiar with Reading to Succeed, right?
Right.
And the law. I mean, that's law, Reading to Succeed. So how will you mesh that?
Well, puppetry programs that we're talking about, they mesh because of interaction that the children are involved with the standards.
Mm-hmm. And the puppetry is a supplemental. Our curriculum will be guided by Super Kids. That's the one we have. Super Kids. Curriculum for K through 2 Super Kids. You don't know that one?
No.
Okay.
Super Kids?
Yeah.
What is that?
Super Kids is a K through 2 reading program that has strong phonetic background and phonics background. As a matter of fact, we met and it's in the description of it is in the appendices. We actually met them through the conference with the Alliance. And I think a lot of charter schools use that when we were
there. And so they're aligned with the state standards?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, I'm very familiar with MAP as a benchmark, but what's STAR?
Well, STAR, and even in the district we are working now, well, STAR seems to be further along with the alignment of standards. But when we look at MAP and STAR, they don't assess. One of them assesses science, but the other one does not.
If you pay more, you got to pay more for math to get.
And so that's why we said one or the other, because with what's going on with the state now in forms of assessment, I think everybody's kind of looking at, because nobody has quite done it yet. They're all saying they're going to do it. So what we're hoping is we have another year to decide.
Right. Well, there are a lot of schools in the state who are STEM education or STEAM, mm-hmm. and who have been doing it, and they they've got good results with them. So I mean, there's a lot of places to look, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, and we also looked at T21. We're looking at what they're doing.
Okay, and the technology that you talked about in here, your iPads, how will you blend that with the learning?
In STEM? Mm-hmm. Because just with some of the STEM lessons I've looked at, what children have to do is, we don't always have everything we need. Technology is so that if you want to see how to dissect a frog, you can bring it in through technology. I forgot the name of the program exactly. So you're right there, and students have hands-on, and you can almost manipulate it from the screen through that way. Because we're small and we're rural. We know
we know that we may not have all the financial resources, but through technology, we'll be able to bring some things to life to our children.
So will it be one-to-one technology?
We hope so.
And
because we know that costs too.
That would be in August of 16, students will have one-to-one.
What we're doing is, I don't know if we'll have it by August the 16th, but that's something that we will be working on in the interim,
right,
to try to ensure that we have.
I'm sorry taking so long. Is that all right?
Yeah, you're getting close.
Looping, you know, looping is good if you've got the right teacher.
Yes, I have been, when you saw up there, there was a looping principal, that was me, a charter principal. Of McCormick Charter Loop School, I had loop, and it does depend on the teacher, the teachers. You have to have the right ones to want to loop. But when they loop, teachers gain two grades of curriculum knowledge. And when my teachers are teaching second grade, and they've had first grade, they know what children need to have in second grade. And when I've had loop in two schools, which are principal. And in each school, the loop classes outperform the regular classes. And I think it's because you have the right teacher, and you have the teacher that's constantly building our content knowledge. Because if they haven't been first grade, and they have been up to second grade, they know what they need to have. And also what happens with the loop process is you close in some of that gap you would have that you would, the time lost when you are, when children first enter your classroom. You know, it takes weeks for children to get to know the teacher. You don't have that. You don't have that gap.
Okay. This is my last one. You talked about camps. Do you have the camps built into your budget?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And then, this is my last one. So we talk about, you know, it's one thing to talk about STEM, it's one thing to read articles about STEM, it's one thing to look at videos about STEM, but you got to write curriculum.
That's right.
So what is your process of writing curriculum? Who's going to do that?
Ruth Patrick and S2STEM is going to help us do that. Not only have we talked to people in our region, we've talked with call names. I work down in a little country right now with Mr. Prevost. We talked about who's going to help us do that and how will that be done. Because I'm not a mathematician or a scientist, but what I do well is getting people to help me do what I need to get done. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the experts as far as that. We're not going to try to write.
Lindsay?
Thank you. You mentioned you're in a small rural area with limited financial resources and STEM is expensive, so we've kind of covered that. I'm curious about the recruiting piece. Betty touched on it just a minute. With the teaching, have you identified a school leader at this point? Has someone committed to come in? Do you have somebody in mind?
That was my daughter, who's an assistant principal right now for 504 coordinator. But it's been a 2-year process, and young people kind of need to make money. And so, you know, she's kind of right now not sure because of that, and, you know, life goes on. So we're looking for someone, we will look for someone who has some background and who wants to do that. So, no, we don't have anybody right now.
Okay. And on the committee and the planning committee.
Yes.
And that, out of that, are there people on the committee that will be employed by the school? Or that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And can you identify?
Me.
Okay.
Who is, because of an investment in it, not employee,
okay,
just kind of subcontracted, and I work cheap because I want everyone to happen. I'm going to help with some of the professional development and some of those things. What we realized, even when we looked at charter schools that were not successful, and schools anywhere that are not successful. Oftentimes, beginning principals don't have enough support. We have people that are qualified, not only on this committee, but in the community, that could help provide some of that support that you wouldn't have to pay $80,000 or $90,000 for.
Okay, and my last question on the Bonics and Tuffet Children. My understanding is that business is owned by someone. Is it owned by somebody on the?
What is that now?
The Puppet and Bonics program.
Yes,
that you use, okay, and that's, are there any other programs or anything that you're bringing in that are part of someone, a business of someone on the committee, or is that the only one?
Well, this program is a supplement to our curriculum.
Okay.
It's not expensive.
We've got volunteers.
Okay.
I mean, believe me, we gave the rights to the state of South Carolina for this program to the educational TV. Mm-hmm. And we do programs throughout the Southeast with no funding. In fact, we're doing a lot now at GRU. They've endorsed the program, and we're working closely with them. And the people over there know how to write grants. This lady right here, she's a wonderful grant writer. And a professor there is a very good friend of ours who is the CEO of the GRU Literacy Center.
Okay, thank you.
So it's basically very, you know, basically what we need are the materials, you know, for the making of.
It's not expensive.
It's not. It's
okay.
Not at all.
Okay. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Ron?
I have only two things. One's a statement and one's an observation. Going back to the question that Reese alluded to, the issue of aspiration versus strategic initiatives, I understand the leader and it's pretty critical to me because it's a major cornerstone that you're organizing around, and that is the leadership is, as I understand this, a major pillar of your aspiration. I'm correct in that assumption. Is that right?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Leadership is a major component, a major cornerstone. And I can't find either in your presentation or in the application, the specific strategies that are designed to deliver that, for lack of a better term, using Reese's terminology, aspiration. I can't align the specific strategy through curriculum, through our programmatic. I can't align how you're going to deliver this leadership as a major cornerstone of your program. And I'm not asking a question, I guess. That's an observation that I've made. And I expected it to be clarified in the presentation, and it wasn't. The other issue, the cost of the STEM, especially since you indicated one-to-one technology support, I think is seriously understated.
Well, one-to-one, in the district that I'm working now, it took several years to get one-to-one, and for one-to-one phasing it in.
Well, in the absence, then what's your substitute?
Well, what if they get single? Single laptops, those are not expensive, like Chrome tablets and whatever. Because in the district where I'm working now, that's what we started with. And then and through funding through the technology director, the one-to-one is coming, and it's coming in phases. As I said earlier, we know we're starting out, as with all schools and all charter schools, I assume, you don't have all the funding you need or that you want. You can't implement everything you want at first, but we can work towards doing that. And we work towards one-to-one, by having single devices, individual devices, that can be purchased without a lot of money?
I would assume staff has analyzed this, the cost issue relative to STEM, with budget analysis that's been done, and if the staff is satisfied that it's adequate, I won't pursue that any further. That's all I have.
Okay. We'll be hearing from the staff later. I'm assuming you've read the staff report.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Kathleen?
Well, the one advantage of following Betty is that
there's nothing left. There's nothing left.
No, not at all. But having said that, the conversation has piqued my interest in a couple of different things. You mentioned, I think one of you ladies is a former charter school principal. Is that correct?
That's me.
Oh, that's you. I beg your pardon. And this was McCormick Looping Charter?
McCormick Looping.
Okay. How long ago was that?
1999.
Okay. And this was this school was authorized by McCormick County, or?
Yes.
Okay. Is it no longer open?
No. I left the school. I was principal there from 1999 through 2002. The principal that came after me decided she didn't want to quite do that much, so they decided not to.
So it closed after your departure?
Yes, after my departure.
Okay. And
but while I was there, the scores were excellent.
I'm sorry, say again?
While I was there, the scores were excellent.
Okay, thank you. And I'm also interested in, you mentioned more than a couple of times, your, I guess, developing relationship with Fox Creek, which, as you know, is one of this district's charter schools, very successful, and I believe is high school 9 through 12?
Right.
Yes.
So how do you see your relationship with Fox Creek going forward? I'll just leave it open-ended. How?
Okay. Josh Tran is principal there. We've gone to board meetings. Josh and I have worked with, and when we started this venture, and knowing that we were in the same northern end, they're on the east, northeast, and we're on the northwest, and the school would be close proximity. Knowing our community and knowing that the northern end of our county was wanting a middle school charter school, which Josh and I have talked, and he's relayed things back and forth to the board. But anyway, we've talked about a way that they could help us. We were questioned about our diversity. Well, Josh, they've been questioned about their diversity. They're more white, and we're more black. And we kind of laughed about it, mixing together. We just kind of mutual. We talked about how our children would feel, because we'd be on that end. A lot of our children from that end are wanting to go to Fox Creek. We have two high schools in our district, Fox Creek and Strom Thurmond. And we've talked about people that we could possibly share, like contracted people. One of the members on our team that is very much helping us with the STEM effort is Mr. Rahman, who's a teacher at Fox Creek. He teaches the high-level course, science, biology, the upper-level course. As a matter of fact, in our writing, he was very much responsible for the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade portions of that. And so he's working. So the school is very amicable about lending us folks and helping us along the way. And we see it turn, because what they see is our school with an investment in helping their population.
So perhaps creating kind of a mini feeder system.
Yes, right.
It's what I hear you describe.
Yes, ma'am.
And I am a substitute teacher at Fox Creek.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. One other question, if I may. Some of the fellows who are dealing with facilities and financing, there was in the original submission mention of a $2.5 million loan in order to
I assume, purchase modular and then make the transition to a building. Could you clarify that for me? Because I didn't see anything that specific in the second submission. Like this one, the one we're talking about
okay.
today.
All right. Of course, if you're familiar with funding with charter schools, there has to be startup money. And then you move into a phase.
You can't spend that on buildings.
Well, let me explain. Okay. Then you move into a monthly mortgage or a monthly lease. So when you look at that $2.5 million, you're looking at a K through 8 facility. Mm-hmm. You know, you pay monthly leases, and as you get to the end of the eighth year or the eighth grade, then through private funding that we'll be doing during that time period, we'll have additional funds to move into a permanent facility. I don't know if I'm quite answering your question.
Kind of, but I was thinking along the lines of, you know, having a loan of that size in your initial year and trying to get buildings built while in modulars. That's a lot of stuff to get done.
We realize that you have to, not that you don't, but the area that we're located, you mm-hmm. know, and I may be able to answer some of the questions about STEM, about cost of this technology. By degree and by profession, I'm an engineer at Savannah Riverside. Mm-hmm. CSRA is a major hub of research, science, and technology. And when you look at the corporations that are subcontracted by the Department of Energy that employed by the Savannah Riverside, one of their main agendas is to pour into the local educational system.
Right.
So you got these Ruth Patrick organizations there at USC Aiken calling corporation for Daniel at Savannah Riverside. We need engineers to go out and help with some of these local school systems and help develop or reinforce their STEM program.
Tap into the professionalism, which is already there. In other words,
it's already there. Okay. You know, every day I get a local email. Can I go out to AL? Can I go out to Aiken Middle School? Or can I go out to some other high school? So you have that system is already in place because those subcontract companies have a staff set. That's only there, but now you're looking at Bridgestone, a company that has invested $10.5 billion to make this heaviest excavation equipment tire. So you have the technology, you have the resources, and you have the businesses who want to grow the community. I think there was a question about the leadership aspect. When you look at a STEM program, you look at kindergarten working on a STEM program or a scientific experiment or something that they've been tasked with. Five individuals, three girls, two boys. Leadership. You're going to have a team right there. Someone is going to be able to say, okay, how can we do this? And the curriculum is going to challenge you as a team to communicate with each other, to problem solve, to give assessment. So you have leadership coming out of those things even within the STEM program. And I know this because I do this every day.
Right. Well,
among
thank
my
you
team
very
members.
Much. You've answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Leibman.
Two questions, if you don't mind. First one would be, one of our key terms we're charged with here is developing innovative schools.
Right.
Okay. Can you STEM, not that it's obviously it's innovative, but it's not the new kid on the block anymore. You know, it's been around.
Excuse me.
Okay. Well, that may be the case. I just want to hear a little bit more about, like I've heard, there's a lot of aspiration, a lot of good wording and discussion about things you want to do, but in particular, being innovative and how you can utilize that to bring a school in our district that is supposed will represent what we're about. Is what I'm struggling with. So tell me a little bit about just specifically innovation and how you're going to use it.
How are we going to use it? exposure for children in Edgefield County will be a definite plus. You probably don't know about the Johnston community, but I do, and we all do. And to give children exposure to the technology aspect, to engineers, and we talked about the 100 black men of Augusta. We talk about business. We're talking about having a leadership where, and actually we talked with them about getting some of these young boys into their businesses or for lunch where they have to dress up. Things that children are not exposed to are planning field trip. Their field trip might be in the industry, might be in Bridgestone down the street. It may be to look at the tires and how, and making that very real to them about what they see, what they don't see. We have to build aspiration in these children to want to be able to come out of, rather above the situations they're in. And what we have done is we have really gone around and looked for opportunities where people will be able to help us do that for children. We want to make a better life for them. And we have solicited people that will help them be able to do that. And we have, it's like Ted said, we have so much going and coming around us, we would be foolish not to take advantage of it to help the children in this camp.
Okay. So there are give me the level of commitment, because I'm a CPA, business entrepreneur, that's my different things I do, so I'm involved in programs where we, you know, businesses go into schools and help stuff. What's the level of commitment? And you talk about Bridgestone, and I mean, has there been a meeting with Bridgestone? I mean, did Bridgestone say, yes, we will come into your school and do some project-based type exposure to them?
Well,
has there been that level of commitment?
Well, we have a member in our committee that really, and we talked about doing that. Tom talked about 501c. What we're going to do is ask Bridgestone for a lot of money. We're going to ask Bridgestone for a lot of money. And when we ask Bridgestone for a lot of money, we want to be able to have 501c. It's not that we haven't thought about it. We have been thinking about it. We've made a list of all of those buildings. We're all going to do that. But you understand that, you know, we don't want to go ahead and ask them for $200,000 to invest in Edgefield County, because it's right there, because some of our folks work there. Bridgestone is not even a mile from where you're talking about the school is going to be.
Right.
We want to be able to have some things in place so they will say yes. And Tom was a former county administrator. He's the person that knows how to do that. And sometimes we have to just wait for the right timing.
In addition to that, Dollar General recently came to this community, the small community, and I was reading last night about some of the contributions that they make. And in that information, it was saying that they make contributions to education. What level, I don't know, but as soon as we get that 501c3, we're going to send a letter to them as well. And because they're new to the community, I just know they're going to support us in our efforts.
Okay. One last question back to the facility, because that's something I deal with real estate a lot, building and things of that nature. And deal with banks all the time and loans and fun stuff like that. I'm trying to wrap my head around, and I know it's a struggle in our district for facilities, so I feel your pain, is you're going to start this school in modular units.
Yes.
The entire school is going to be nothing but modular units.
Not triangles.
Well, that's what I'm trying to envision. A modular unit is, and my kids went to a school that has modular units that came in. And their trailers, but they were very nice. But I'm trying to. They also had a permanent building there as well to facilitate all the stuff that you have to be in compliance. I'm just curious, what's this vision? How do you actually see physically this school being set up in the meantime?
Okay, well, I myself as facilities chairman has went to the planning committee and asked your minimum number of classrooms, okay? Now, I've seen what's already dictated in the Office of School Facilities Planning Guide for modular units as well as permanent facilities. Modular units, by definition, is a building that's mobile. It can be mobile for a period of 10 years or 15 years. The fact is, it's not part of a permanent foundation or permanent structure. So, working with the planning committee, looking at the minimum number of classrooms, staff, administrative, down to the janitorial classes. They have built these type of systems where you have this whole school system called modular unit, a modular building, modular facility for 2 years, almost up to 10 years. Of course, they build them for much longer than you want to stay. So as we get to a point where we are financially able to build a permanent facility, in fact, perhaps in the eighth grade year, which will be the last year you will have a modular unit, we'll be running a parallel schedule to build a permanent facility at the same time. So there are challenges, and I know where you come from, but a modular unit is just bigger than 2,000 square feet. A modular unit can be 20,000 square feet. So we're kind of looking at those things and looking at it on a minimum classroom basis, and what the finance budget is challenged with and can handle at the same time. To piggyback on your last question, I can tell you what historically the subcontracting companies that affiliate with Savannah Riverside, I can tell you historically what they have committed to the Richmond County School area, the Aiken County School area, as well as USC right down the street in Aiken. So you have historical data. They're part of when Floyd Daniels say, I want to bid on a DOE facility. You know, part of their component is developing the local education system because we have a strong research type, technical, and scientific area right there, you know, for us not to take advantage of that. So we're looking forward with that as well as Bridgestone. But to answer your original question, that's how I, using the expertise of subcontractors especially, as well as the Office of School Facility, I foresee no real big issues or challenges moving from a modular unit to a permanent facility.
Has there been any talk with any financing arm? And I know that's down the road, but just when we threw out the $2.5 million, and I just did not see that somewhere. Anyway, started to ask. Okay.
We've looked at private funding, okay. Meaning private from companies or personal individuals, as well as USDA. Okay. What hinges on a lot of these things is the 501c3 approval, which we're working through, and we're already in the process. We're writing our application. So there is a business strategy and a facility strategy and a fundraising strategy at the same time.
Okay. I'll say, John, I was a CPA and did a lot of 501c3 applications, and they were hit and miss. Some came back, never had one question, and I got it in 3 months, and that's best case scenario. And besides that, you'll get a lot of questions from the IRS, and what I'm concerned about is the timing of all this. That if the application has not even been sent in yet, then the clock hasn't started. And I'm just letting you know that that's my experience, and that is a valid concern, that the timing is the issue. I'm really, the 501c3 incorporation, all that stuff can be done because you can always dissolve it. It doesn't cost a lot.
Right.
That I feel should already exist, just to help with the timing of getting everything done and ready by next August. And then really just the last thing, just because I'm kind of a numbers guy, I did notice in some of our staff notes that there were some discrepancies. And you said you have a CPA firm that's putting your budget together, I think a discrepancy upwards of 40 students based on calculations.
Melissa looked at that. Okay. When we looked at that, we forwarded that to her. If you look at the enrollment projection sheet, we showed it up there. There's 228 students, not 216. And when you look at in the appendices, when you look at in the budget, on item three, what Melissa said and what I told them, well, I don't know who did it in this department, but they didn't calculate the poverty part and the other part that goes in to help make that bigger.
Okay, and staff can talk about that.
Yeah.
So no worries, okay. Thank you.
I won't be long. Have any of y'all ever started a school from scratch when it didn't exist?
No.
Okay.
Chartered a school from the beginning?
Yes, ma'am. From where you are, right? Have you ever been through this starting as or an enterprise that would be this size?
I have been part of church facility building.
I'm talking about more than facilities. I'm talking about an enterprise, a business. This is a business. I mean, I know it's education, and that's the reason we've got some educators and people here can ask all, but you won't be able to deliver that unless you can do the business part of it. And so what I want to ask you is this. I hear a lot of the word's been thrown around, and it's a good one, aspirational, hope, and hope's a good thing, but hope's not a business plan. And so what I want to know, and maybe the staff can answer this later too or give me input on it, is if none of the things you have, here's the one piece of revenue you know you're going to get. There's one and only one right now, other than you've got some firm commitments. So that's great. I was impressed by that. And that is the per pupil money that's going to come from the state. That's all you know you're going to get right now. If that's all that comes in, if Bridgestone says we got other things to do, if Savannah River Plant says we're maxed out, if the private individuals y'all know other than the ones that you've got nailed down say, sorry, I'm committed. You have to have a plan that will work with that. We can't afford to start a school hoping that some things will happen in terms of the ability to make it operate and to build the facilities and everything. So, the staff mentioned that the budget and finance section was minimal. So I guess my question is, if none of that stuff comes in, and believe me, I have started enterprises where none of that stuff, I knew somebody's going to help me. I mean, your mom and daddy won't help you sometimes when you think they will. It's just the fact of life. I mean, if they look at your business plan and your daddy says, this ain't going to work, then daddy don't give you the money. That's just how it works, and I know that from experience. So can you do all you're talking about if none of that comes in?
We believe so, because the budget's built on just student-based cost. We didn't build it on any of that other stuff. That budget is built on, we don't have any of that other stuff built on that budget.
You can handle a loan, you can build the buildings, Mr. Engineer.
Yes. I mean when we're looking at private donations and loan, I want to go back to 2.5.
No, right now I'm just... I guess I need to wait and see what the staff says, because I'm kind of confused.
Your question is, do we have the expertise to go into a business?
Not the expertise. I mean, that would be another question. But no. What I'm asking is, does your plan, because you're talking, what I'm hearing is a lot of talk about the stuff that could happen, and we would all hope it does happen. But the realistic part of me says, we better have a plan that we can do all this if none of this happens. Because the only thing we know will happen is the funding from the per pupil allocations, and that's what I'm asking you is your finances such that if none of this comes in, you're okay and you can do everything you've talked about. And if that's the case, then what is the importance of this other money that you're hoping you'll get?
The other money is extra.
Okay.
When we talked with Melissa, and we've had many conversations with Melissa, the budget was built on what would come in from students.
Right.
Now, what we see is if we get 200 students instead of 228 the first year, then we know we can't hire as many teachers. You know, I know about teacher allocation and what you can do and all of that. I mean, I've been in this thing for years and have had to work with budgets. I also know about a federal program director. I know about if you don't have the money, you can't do this, and we have to prioritize. And I think when schools are starting, and I've seen schools start, you have to spend what you have, and you have to work with what you have. You know, it's just like I do my own budget.
Right.
It's bigger than my budget, maybe not. But the thing about it is you can't spend what you don't have.
Right.
And if we get extra, that will help us do extra. But we know that when you start a school, we realize that when you start a school, you start with bare minimums. You don't try to fluff up and do things. I mean, you don't buy a $5,000 projector when you can only afford a $300 one.
Okay, that's all I have. Anybody got anything else before we get a staff report?
I'm going to turn it over.
Do you have any?
No, I do. I'm going to, you can turn about just adding to. I do have. Obviously, you've read the report. As I started reading this charter, to me, it almost became a charter in the written format of list. You know, a lot of associations listed, but no specificity. And that was the written part really lacked in specificity from a staff point of view. And I'll let Dana, was chair of the committee that reviewed the written part, but I met with them also. And that was our major concern. There are some other things, the comment of hiring first-year teachers and retired teachers, STEM teachers, and this was alluded to, take a lot of professional development and bringing in the cheapest teachers you can find. That does bother me a little bit. But anyway, Dana? It's okay?
That's what we need.
So, as you all know, we did have a cross-disciplinary applicant review team that consisted of staff of the charter school district and an external evaluator. And we applied the South Carolina Department of Ed application guidance and then the evaluation rubric that was developed by the Associations for Institutional Research that the State Department of Ed adopted and which we chose to adopt for this applicant cycle. And based on the application of the guidance and the rubric, we determined that out of a 15 application sections, the application did not meet the criteria. In addition, it also did not, the executive summary of the application also did not satisfy the criteria set forth. You can see by looking at our report that, and the letter that was issued to the school board chair on the 25th to inform her that when we applied the rubric and the guidance, we did not find that the totality of information demonstrated substantial likelihood that this committee had the capacity to establish a Bible school based on national standards. That areas such as the evidence of supporting need, serving students with disabilities, enrollment sections, lacked the detail and specificity that we needed in order to for the committee to have demonstrated an appropriate understanding of those areas. The same to be said of the educational program, goals and objectives, the discipline section, governance, operations, budget, finance, employees, and facility section. And as most of the board knows, this was an iteration of a previous application. And even though there's some clarification provided today, 25% of the letters of support were written by planning committee members. There was no clear evidence as to how many students were represented in the surveys and signatures. And then the evidence of to support the fact that the committee or that the area wants the school to send their kids to it was all from 2014, so with the letters of support. So that was a big red flag for us there. But that's just one example. I know the budget was a big concern. It'll probably get discussion here. When we didn't see a clear explanation of how the school would remain solvent, there was no description of actual construction costs. Of course, as Kathleen had mentioned, the previous application referenced a very sizable construction cost, but no actual costs were included this time around, although construction costs were mentioned. So those are some examples as to why we reached the conclusion.
No, ma'am, not right now. So I mean, we see the board recommendation. Does anybody have any questions from the staff about their the document we have from them? Who reviewed the budget and the finances?
Yes, each of the external reviewer whose background is has STEM background, also background in evaluating charter school applications around the country, and has been an administrator at charter schools in other states, and works in the North Carolina area now in the area of education choice. And then each of the staff members, and on this team, Laura, let me know if I missed anyone, Laura Bain, Becky Davis, Courtney Mills, Robbie Compton, William James, and Bobby Riker, who was our previous financial analyst and now is the director of performance management, and myself. So all of us reviewed the application in its entirety and the budget, therefore the budget as well.
Okay, so the way y'all do it, no one person focuses on budget or something?
Exactly. And then okay. we did obviously have probably asked more questions of our financial analyst of
right.
the application in that part, or our external evaluator, but the process is a consensus one, so we reached consensus on each section of the application as to whether it met the criteria.
Okay, and
then based on that, we reached by consensus
okay.
whether to make a recommendation to not approve or approve to you, okay. and that's what you have.
And my question is because I hear concerns in other areas that other people know a lot more about than I do, but financial viability is the one that I feel like I understand the most. And I had concerns from what I heard, but I just want to make sure that I see what the staff has written. And they say the finance section is minimal. Well, and then the next sentence. So y'all do not feel, this is a question, I'm not trying to make a statement here. Is it true that y'all do not feel that you have adequate evidence of the financial viability of the school? Is that true?
We did not find, and this is pursuant to our application review process, that if we were to find that the application upon full review, which was what was conducted, did not articulate a sound fiscal plan, as well as a sound educational plan, as well as a sound organizational plan, including governance and operations, we would not make a recommendation to approve to you.
Okay.
Another question.
Yeah.
Dana, are you saying that the financial information was not submitted, or what was submitted just didn't add up? Because I'm familiar with Melissa, I know she does very good work. She's an excellent CPA. She's fiscally conservative, so she's not going to go out there on a hope and a dream. She's going to look at facts and based on her experience. But what was submitted?
The appendices are part of the application, obviously. So we didn't make a find. We did, as you see, make some notations of some discrepancies in terms of enrollment projections and then the actual budget reflecting a different number for enrollment. But the narrative, the written application itself, did not meet the criteria, where it does ask for a thorough, at a minimum, in order to meet that criteria, you have to have reflect an adequate understanding of the financial operations and responsibilities, and that's what we found was minimal. There was not a thorough or, at a minimum, adequate explanation, description, of the budget and finance, and that we found lacked. We did not have a clear explanation of how the school would remain financially solvent or, you know, would work towards sustainability kinds of things. So it wasn't so much the budget that was prepared by the CPA, that was an appendix. It's, did this group in their written application demonstrate a clear understanding of the financial requirements and the financial component of the application?
That answer?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, discussion. Then any further discussion from the board? Reese, were you going to say?
I appreciate the enthusiasm that the group brings, the obvious concern for addressing needs that exist in the community. And this may not be, I just had a comment. I ask you a question about the transition from the planning, the aspirational position, to the operational position. Lindsay reiterated my question. It is a concern. I did not hear in the application, candidly, the kind of nuts and bolts, I don't see in the application, nor did I hear in the presentation, the kind of nuts and bolts. It's not just a matter that the need exists, or that you want to solve the problems that created the need. We have to know that you have the tool set in place to go out and actually address the issues and do it in a manner that we can be confident is going to be successful. I liken the process of approving a charter school to people come to us with a plan for building a rocket ship. And they explain to us how they put the rocket ship together, and they want our authorization to launch. And unfortunately, we have to keep in mind that that rocket ship contains 100, 200, 400 children, that we're fiduciaries. We have obligations to the taxpayers to make sure that we spend their tax dollars appropriately. We're also, in my opinion, primarily fiduciaries to the children that will be educated or not in the schools that we authorize. And I think you guys have got some great ideas. I didn't hear the kind of specifics. I kept hearing references throughout today's presentation to we don't foresee any problems or we won't anticipate any delays in respect to numerous things. I heard
Reese, yeah. I'm going to interrupt. At this point, we're at board discussion.
I'm sorry.
I understand.
I thought I was getting off.
Well, but if you could aim your comments to the other board members right now. We're in a deliberative phase.
Yeah,
I hate to interrupt you because what you're saying is important, but we got to do we're supposed to do.
I'm good. I didn't see the kind of specifics,
right,
either in the presentation today or in the application. It looks to be an application that could be a pretty good rocket ship one day. Mm-hmm. The framework, you know, I see the outline, but it's got the frame and the engines, mm-hmm. and there we're being asked to fire up the engines, and I think there's more work to be done. So.
Ron?
I have not in the past been hesitant or embarrassed to vote against the recommendation of staff.
Right.
to Wayne's.
Elliot will get used to it.
Right.
There have been some commonalities in my the points I've made from this seat, and one is the need for innovation, which I can't find here. The second is a compelling educational, a compelling addition to the public education of the children in the state, which there is one here. And the third for me has been underserved communities. Wayne and I have talked a lot about this. We have some communities that are underserved. We need to find some ways to get charters to fill those voids. And so two of those three things are present, because I think they meet that test. But there's some problems I can't overcome. Paul in Romans says that hope and something you can see isn't hope. You can see it, it's there. And so I'm willing to take a ride on hope for a certain distance, but the lack of the specificity here to where I can see, for instance, the thing I went to was not STEM. The thing I went to was leadership. We need somebody who understands how to implement a leadership, strong leadership curriculum in our schools. Well, I couldn't find the strategies that delivered the intent. There is an intent for leadership, but how are you going to articulate to me the strategies for delivering that intent? And then the reasonable hope for sustained success. Well, if there are significant budget deficiencies, that's not there. And so we make a commitment where there's a need without the reasonable expectation that that financial, that fiscal commitment, that commitment of resources can be sustained over time. So in spite of my desire to want to say, well, staff is wrong, I'm willing to hope that this can be done. I think staff is right. And I can't make that.
Please put that in the minute.
Mark the date and the time.
Even a broken clock. But I can't, in this case, I can't make that leap.
Just briefly, we all know that this group has been before us before, not quite a year ago. And in a second submission, I was expecting to see, read, and hear today substantially different strategies and much more specificity than I think is here. As a result of having been through this meat grinder once before, what I have found, essentially, with few exceptions, is not even an update, just a rehash of what we saw a year ago. And that was very disappointing to me. And I go back to some of Betty's questions a year ago, and you asked the same questions essentially today, termed a little bit differently. How? And I didn't hear any answers to those questions on any of the topics, unfortunately.
I sense that we're ready to vote. Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we deny the Bettis Preparatory Leadership Academy application.
Second.
Moved and seconded that the application be denied. All in favor of the motion, which again is to deny, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. Then motion fails.
Motion passes.
I mean, the motion passes, the application fails, excuse me. Yeah. Okay. We appreciate all the work you've done, and I know you're disappointed, but hopefully the comments gave you some reasons why. Thank you. When is the next hearing?
One.
That's, we're probably going to need to push that back just a little bit. Some lunches here.
Yes.
So we'll recess then. Let's try not to take a full hour. If we could, maybe 30, 45.